Coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.
I think the biggest thing that I run into all the time in this profession is people want the job they want, but they're not willing to play the role that they have.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches podcast, we're joined by Kate Popovec-Goss, head women's coach at Boston College. Coach Popovec-Goss has built her career through assistant roles at LaSalle, Northwestern, and Colgate before stepping into head coaching positions at Bradley and now Boston College. Her path reflects steady growth through multiple roles within a program and a strong understanding of how to build and lead a team. In this episode, we discuss how she grew in the industry from between roles without prior experience and attacked each opportunity. People often underestimate about rebuilding a program as a head coach and the first thing she is focused on when taking over as a new head coach.
Welcome back, everybody, coaches, and thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches podcast. Your hosts, Alan Major, Doug Caputo. We're joined alongside the recently appointed head coach over at Boston College, ladies and gentlemen, Kate Popovec-Goss. Coach Popovic, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. And I know my name is a super mouthful. Everyone just calls me Coach Pop. Go ahead. It just keeps things real simple, but excited to be here. Just excited to chat about coaching journey, all those good things, being at Boston College. And it's just, obviously, it's a really crazy time, but it's always exciting too.
Yeah, love it. No, thank you for doing this. You slightly have a few things going on right now, which we discussed before we jumped on here. Anyway, no, this is really cool for us. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Number one, the first thing I always like to do is give a reference to the person who got us the opportunity to be able to connect. So I want to give a shout out to my guy, Danny Reese, out there over at Youngstown State for introducing us, giving us the chance to be able to talk with you. But you have had a great career so far, obviously various assistant positions, worked your way up, multiple head coaching opportunities, Bradley and now Boston College. Looking forward to it because I know, as we said, you recently got appointed. You're in the moving process, so we caught you at a hot time. But we're going to bring you back to the beginning of the roots, right? You always got to look at the ground level first. And then before, everybody always sees the limelight, the head coach, the great opportunities, but nobody necessarily always, or I should say really, knows what got you to where you are now. Working in operations, being in the development side, obviously a lot of recruiting. All of those are like different lens. They give you different scopes of the game. But looking back, if you really had to say which position, which role, what do you feel really taught you the most that you still rely on or are intact with previously? Was there any roles in particular?
Gosh, I think you could look at all of them and be like, I learned here. I do say, and I've told this to a lot of people, I think being in operations is really important to anyone who wants to be a head coach because you see everything that goes into a program, right? You see all the behind the scenes stuff. I'm happy I started in ops versus just jumping right into an assistant role because you don't get to see the day-to-day stuff that you need to know and how the department connects and all these things that go into just the day-to-day part of being a head coach. And so I think that was really great. Also, like when back then there wasn't as many spots on a staff. So like when I was ops, I did everything. I did scouting reports. I did travel. I did opening the gym at 4:30 in the morning. Like you do all those things. And so I think it also teaches you a sense of gratitude and appreciation for people. That was something that I definitely learned throughout my career. And I had a really, one of my biggest mentors is Joe McEwen. And he just retired as the winningest coach at Northwestern. He was the winningest coach at GW for women's basketball and close to 800 career wins, Hall of Fame resume, and definitely Hall of Fame in my book, to still remember the Titans quote. But I think what I always took from him was how you treat people. And I think you definitely learn that being in a service role like ops, just again, the day-to-day grind and you're getting snacks, you're doing laundry, the girls need a ride to the doctor, you show up. It's crazy, but that definitely helped me. And I think too, just the way that I was mentored, I never had bosses that were tight managers. Like they were very much, hey, I think you're talented and you work hard, so you're gonna figure it out. And I always equated the style to like how I learned everything is like, there's two ways to teach people how to swim. You could put like floaties on and teach them the strokes, or you could just throw them in the water and go, good luck. And that was a lot of like how I was mentored. But I think I was mentored that way because I was really trusted by the people who hired me because they knew I was going to work. They knew I was going to ask questions and they knew I was always going to work to try and do things the right way. And so I think learning that way really just prepared me to grow in a lot of different roles and be unafraid to step up and be like, all right, cool, this needs done, I'll do it. Or, hey, okay, I can't be scared to teach this drill because I haven't done it. You got to do it. And I think that to me, more than just maybe a specific position, was probably the most formative way that I prepared for everything that came my way.
Yeah, no, that's so good, Kate. I was talking to a Division II head coaching buddy of mine last week, and he's going into year three, but it's actually year two and a half because he got the job in January where he just was hanging on to the bumper, and it's his alma mater, so the place means the world to him. But we were having a conversation last week, and he's going through putting his roster together, and he'd had some staff movement, so finally the staff has got a little stability, and there's five players in the program, and he's heading into this next season. But I just told him, just keep bringing good people in the building. Yep. Good people with good hearts will figure it out.
Yep.
They just will. And it's very hard to ask people with good, who have good intentions and a good heart, and you know they're in the business for the right reasons. It's hard to ask them to do too much. So you just need to give them a framework. And then typically they'll figure it out. And it's like having really good players, right? You give them a framework and this is what our flow. We kind of want to flow into this and you let me handle the ATOs and all that. But when we're flowing, this is the framework of what we're doing, but you're good and you're good and you're good and be unselfish and make each other all look good. But so important who you bring into the building, and you're going through this now. Right. As you at BC, as you're trying to put everything together. But wow, what a great background of people that you've had to kind of, you've got a great playbook in terms of how you want to put it together because of the mentors you've had and how they treated you. So what a great approach to keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah. Thank you. No, for sure. I always say you win with people. I still believe that, even though it's gotten really chaotic and the modernization of everything and rev share and NIL and numbers and agents and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, AI, Claude.
Oh God, I can't even. But I do. I think you win with people. And I've always believed that. And that was a really formative experience that I had as a player. It was the coaches. It was the teammates. It was all those people that made my experience. And that's why I got into coaching. Not because I was like, oh, I'm going to draw the best ATO. Yeah, that's fun. And that's great. And it's really great when it works. But at the end of the day, it's the relationships you forge, the growth you have, and honestly, what you learn from your players and the people around you. I've definitely been a big believer in that. And in my career, when I've really stuck to that is when I've had the most success. You learn so much, especially taking your first head coaching job. Oh my God. And I would tell my players all the time, I make more mistakes than anyone. I mess up more than any of you guys. But I think what you learn the most is when you stray away from your gut and when you stray away from people you trust, that's when things get really crazy. And even if you're going to fail in this business, you're going to fail forward. It is what it is. But if you fail doing things the way you believe you should have done them, at least you know that's what you did and you can grow and learn from it. And that's time and time again, what I've told myself is I've grown and failed and lost and won and hired people and got players, lost players. You just kind of have to stick to that. You have to know where your compass is pointing and continue to try and veer that way. And it's hard. It's hard to do that. But I know the times that I didn't is the times that I felt the worst about what I was doing or the times where I had the most true failure. And I think that's definitely what we learned. But also I've had really great people just supporting us and supporting me along the way. And you just never know. You never know people that you come across, how they're going to come back to you in this business. That's just how it works.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah, it's a small little pool tangled web that we weave. No, I'm very fortunate for the people that have helped me and just kind of how I've learned.
Nah, I love it. We can all take lessons from baseball players at bat 300. Because those guys that find their way to 300.
It's a Hall of Fame.
And they're failing the other seven times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just shoot 40% from three and you're one of the best 3-point shooters in the country. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Means you're missing 6 out of 10. Like,
how are those other 7 or 6 times going to get me better in my three or four times?
Exactly.
And now, I love that you said that because a lot of the younger coaches that are on this pod that listen to us, they can't hear that enough about you do have to play the long game, but play the long game with people in terms of mm-hmm. your impact and doing it that way, because you can't go wrong when you do that. You just can't.
Absolutely.
Well, and you mentioned too about making mistakes, and you said you had more than enough mistakes for everybody else. I feel like that's the best teacher, obviously having the great people, the people around you to be able to help excel you. And as you said, getting thrown in the fire, you're going to make more and more mistakes when you mess up something, but it's really about how you react and how you resolve that problem. And then when that situation comes up later on, how do you tackle it the next time? So off of that, there was always this was something that I thought of. And then immediately, as soon as it was perfect timing, seeing your background, seeing the way you've grown, and then ultimately now having multiple head coaching spots. If you think about the college, or I should say the coaching landscape, you go from this is just a hypothetical, but like a video coordinator to then a director of basketball operations. Those are completely different positions in a sense, right? One's working more video, more the visual side, actually seeing the game. The other one is completely, nowadays it's on the court, but I was going to say it's more off the court. They don't really have as many skills that correspond in the sense of you're going from a video coordinator to now a dobo to an assistant coach to a head coach, not knowing the skills or the abilities going into that next position. How do you jump into that next role not having much prior experience, but just take it head on? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think the biggest thing that I learned, and I think it's a lesson in any aspect of what you're doing, right? Whether you're a player, whether you're in a job, whatever. I think the biggest thing that I run into all the time in this profession is people want the job they want, but they're not willing to play the role that they have. It's the same thing as a player. When you have someone who comes in and is sitting behind an all-conference player, maybe they are going to be all-conference in 2 years. They're not there yet, or they don't have that opportunity yet. You have to figure out how to be a star in the role that your team needs you to serve, right? And I think I was really, to be honest with you, I think that was probably one of my biggest strengths, was I was just going to be a star in my role. And then as things came to me in that role that maybe were outside of it, I just was willing to take those on. But you can't get those responsibilities until you do the responsibilities that you have well. So when I was ops, at that time, I couldn't be on the court. I couldn't do that. But I was booking hotels. I was buying Target pickup orders for the road. I was doing all these things. But my coach was like, do you want to do scouts? And you can't present them to the team, but you can present them to us. And I was like, absolutely. And so I gobbled that up. But he wasn't going to give me that until he saw I was taking care of being ops first and doing that really well. And so I think that was the first thing I did, was focus on what I was supposed to be doing and what I needed to do for the team. And then you get more. And whatever more you can get, whether that's sitting in a recruiting meeting, whether that's working with a coach on their scouts, whatever it is, take that on. But you can't take that on until you're good at what you're supposed to be doing. That's number one. And then number two, I think that the biggest thing you have to be willing to do is figure it out, but also ask questions. Not every question. No one has time to hold your hand. So I don't have time to hold your hand on every single little thing, but I do have time if you need me to steer you in a way so that you can properly figure it out. Or if you feel like you're at a point where you truly don't know and you don't want to do something that's detrimental, of course, that's what we're here for, right? And also, I think lean into the people around you, because when I was coming up, it wasn't just my boss. It was the assistants that had 10 years of experience. It was the people that had been in the grind for a while, and they saw an eagerness in who I was, and they were willing, and they dumped stuff on me. They dumped the grunt work, but that's how you learn. And so I think you just have to be willing to take whatever is best for the team, but you have to star in your role first. You cannot ignore that current role to try and get to where you're going. It's kind of, I only care about offense, so I'm just not going to play defense. Guess what? If you don't play defense too, you're not going to be on the court to shoot that shot. So you might as well just you got to grind it out. You got to figure it out. And so yeah. I think that mentality is important. I think it's really important now because everything is instant gratification, right?
Yeah.
And it's okay, I don't know something, I just Google it on my phone. Oh, hey, do you guys know how to get anywhere? I don't. I use a GPS all the time. It's pathetic.
Every time. It is.
And so I think that too, we're so used to just getting everything like this and getting what we want right away. You forget that's not how life works. And again, mm-hmm. you just gotta take that step back and go day by day, what can I do to be the best that I can be for the people around me? And then I think that other stuff naturally starts to fall into place. And then you forge a mentality of figuring things out. And that's really beneficial.
Yeah. No, I love that you said that. Mentality is the word to me that travels, because Doug made a great point. Skills can be maybe unrelated in terms of a position, but it's the mentality that travels from one position to the next. So your willingness to be a great video coordinator may be different in terms of the skills that you need to be a good ops person, but the mentality to figure things out and be a great video coordinator still travels to being a great ops person. The mentality travels through different positions, even though the skills may be different. Correct. And that's the best part of what you just said there. And like, obviously, yeah, we're super electronic right now, but we got to understand, like, you can't let ChatGPT replace true effort. There's a point where true effort literally has to rule the day. Yeah, ChatGPT is going to bail you out every now and then. AI, Claude, whatever, they're going to bail you out every now and then, give you some direction, steer you a little bit. But the day-to-day effort and just, like you said, the grind, enjoying the grind, not fighting the grind, not dreading the grind, but enjoying it. The grind is you're getting the opportunity to do what you love. So, yeah, you're going to throw yourself right into it. It's the second pod in a row where the word willing has popped up. We just had somebody on 2 hours ago that was talking about being willing to do those little things day to day and being an everyday person. I'm so glad you said that because, yeah, it's Just Add Water is taking over what we're doing right now. And that there's got to come a time where it's like, okay, it's all right to just dig in and grind it out and be great exactly where you are. And then let that next thing find you when it's time.
And both of those people that we had are head coaches. So I think they both probably have a
sometimes. I don't know. It depends on the minute of the day, but no.
Yeah.
So the big question is then at this point, you go from your previous, now obviously you were just a head coach at Bradley prior to stepping into Boston College, but we're going to talk from Colgate to Bradley. First year, first time head coach, Coach Pop walks in. What do you feel like was the, this is, I was not ready for this as a head coach?
Everything. and it's so funny because, so I've talked about Joe McEwen and I'll talk about him a lot. Right. And so he would always walk in and be like, oh, so you think you want to be a head coach? And he's got like this just demeanor to him. And of course, every single associate head coach, assistant coach thinks that they are going to be ready and kill it and their plan is perfect and they've got it under control and we're going to be great. You slide that chair over and like, it's just like anything. You can't be prepared until you get to do what you're supposed to do, right? You don't get to make the shot until you get open to make the shot. And so like, so I slid over, it's mid-April, it's late in the portal. I barely have a roster. I have no assistant coaches. It's the first time my fiance and I at this point in time are like apart. It's crazy. And I called Joe maybe 2 weeks into the job. And I was like, why the did you let me do this? Why did you let me? And he's like dying because he's been doing it for 40 years. And it was actually, I was 2 weeks into the job. I was in the office from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. I didn't know where to eat. Like, I didn't know the buildings. I had no staff. And Brian Wardle, who was the men's coach at Bradley, who has had unbelievable success, is just a hell of a coach, wanders around the corner into my office and he's, hey, he's, you're going to be great. He's, listen, these first 2 years are going to suck. My record sucked. Like, we were terrible. Don't look at it. And now he's won like multiple conference championships, playing the NCAA tournament. He's the winningest coach in Bradley history, like all these things. But the first 2 years are so hard, but I promise you're going to get it going. You're going to turn it. And so I think just like those words of affirmation, like gave me a breath. But I think that the hardest thing, honestly, is, okay, you're prepared to manage players. You've been managing players your entire career. That's part of what you do. And as you advance in the profession, you get more responsibility managing. Okay, great. I know how to run a drill. You do have to figure out the league. I think that's something, no matter how much film you watch, until you go through a year of actually playing in that league, you don't really know the league until you're in it, right? Okay, so we'll learn the league, all these things. I think managing a staff is probably the hardest for any first-time head coach because that is just something that you don't have experience doing and you're not going to have experience doing. Even if I was like managing a student manager or maybe GAs or things or helping a younger assistant as I advanced in my tenure, that's mentorship. That's helping. I'm not their boss. Like going and then blending those personalities and making sure you hire correctly, I think is by far the hardest part for any new head coach. And I think the mistake I made the first time I hired, and everyone is different, But I really didn't want to hire a head coach because I wanted to be the head coach. And I was 32 years old and I wanted to prove that I could do this and I was there for a reason. And I was talking to Trish Cullip. It was maybe a year after I got the job. And she told me, Trish Cullip's a great coach, longtime coach at Toledo, now the head coach at Miami.
Yeah.
She said, the one thing I always did was hire head coaches. And she said, even when I had like my first job and had very little money, I couldn't go out and get a college head coach. I hired high school head coaches because they just know what it feels like to sit in the chair. They know what it's like to make a mistake and go home and lose sleep over it. They know what it's like to, they knew all those things. And I so valued that. And so when I had the opportunity, I hired a head coach. I went and got Stephanie Miller, who was an NAIA head coach and had tremendous success at Goshen. And she just came in and would look at me on the hard days and be like, how are you? Mm-hmm. You did a great job today. When you made that call, I know the play didn't work, but that was the right play to call at that moment. Like just those things. And then now I have two head coaches on my staff because it's just so important. And I think letting go of your ego and also being good enough to know where your weaknesses are, like hire around your weaknesses, let people help you. Like you don't have all the answers. You don't have all the time. So hire great people that want to serve you and serve the program and you're going to be wonderful. But I think for me, I think that managing the staff piece was a big transition. And just also, it's hard to know what you need until you recognize you really need it. And I think for me, that was something now going into my second time doing this, it's so much easier. That is the biggest difference. It's, you know what? We're turning around a program. I walked into a roster that had three players chose to stay. One of the freshmen stayed. We had four kids and I know it's going to be hard. We're going to be grinding, but I know who I'm working with and I know how they work and I know we're in this together. And that was the second time around. It's been so much easier.
It's been so much easier. Now, I'm so glad you said that, Kate. That once you are able to organize your first team, that helps you coach your second team. And your staff is always your first team. Mm-hmm. But, and there's, you've heard, I won't say horror stories, but you've heard tough stories about people that maybe made some hires and maybe that person came in with more of an ego than worry about the logo. And so all of a sudden, now you're coaching two teams every day, which can drain you.
Yeah.
Because if you're trying to get one team of grownups organized, it's going to be very difficult to get the team that you really got to deal with on the court. And so it's such a big deal, like you said, of who you bring in and the type of heart they have and somebody that is doing this obviously for the right reasons. But the thing that can drain you as a head coach is if you end up having to coach two teams.
Yes.
As opposed to just one team. You'd rather have one team, everybody coach the other team. But when you got to constantly, because you got 30 some games on your schedule, and that's tough enough to try to beat each one of them by one point and figure that out. But if staff wise things are a little bit wonky, so to speak, that's on your schedule every day.
Yeah.
And that's the opponent that will drain you, is you have to deal with that every single day just to get ready to play one of the other 32 teams.
Absolutely.
So, I'm so glad you said that because a lot of people that aspire to be head coaches, this is good cheat code stuff for them to think about down the line.
And having to get the right people around you. Okay. So you get now, you have the staff around you, right? So we'll fast forward a little bit. We're at Boston College. This is your second time around. You're obviously excited. This is a big opportunity. I believe you already have some assistants formed around you, but you get put first day on campus. What are some of the things that, okay, you have somewhat of a team already based around you. We're fast forwarding a little bit. I know you said you had a couple people who players wise, but you have a good team around you. You have your staff around you. Like you hit the ground day one. What's the first couple things that you're like, hey, this is what I have to tackle?
So obviously when you first get there, it's all about recruiting. We got to get a roster together. We got to do this right and build a team and all that. But I honestly think it's just getting to know people. I think that is probably the biggest mistake you can make is you get so caught up in the tasks that you don't take the time to get to know the people that are going to help you. Like you got to know your equipment guy. You got to know your sports information. You got to know these things. Or make sure, like, I don't have all the time in the day to go meet 40 people and do this, but make sure that as soon as my staff got there, yo, you need to go meet with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because I have to go meet with the AD and my SWA, and I have to go meet with donors, and I have to go do these things. But I need you to go meet with this person and that person. We have to know Amy in academics. We've got to know Derek in equipment. We've got to know these people because they make such a big deal. And also, like, they're really important. And I think sometimes with how transient things have become, it seems so transactional. I just don't buy into that. It's also why I went to a school like a Boston College, because I felt deeply connected that the people there are deeply connected. And that was important to me. So I think just making sure you get to know people is first and foremost. Getting to know the players that are there that you're recruiting, again, so important. I'm really lucky that I brought almost my entire staff with me, and I hired someone I've known for 10 years. I don't need to spend time getting to know them, but we do need to spend time getting to know each other. And I think even though it's the same staff, our roles are evolving and changing. So just allowing people to get into their roles, not having the expectation that it needs to be perfect. Like, our recruiting visits right now aren't what they're going to be in a year. That can't possibly be the standard that we hold ourselves to. We are just in this, right? But I think just that to me is the biggest thing. And then to like, just making sure you carve out time for the things that are important to the university, right? So like, they've brought multiple alumni that have come and that wanted to meet me, or donors that are important, or things like that. And those are really important things because that's the heartbeat of BC. Like, I'm the head coach at BC right now. I'm not going to be the head coach at BC for 100 years. But you know what? The alumni that swings by, she will forever be alumni. The people that have invested in Boston College with their dollars, with their time, they are forever ingrained in the institution. And so I think you have to make sure that you take that time too, because such an important part of the program. And for your players, it's so important that there's value in that too. And so I think that those are important things. And I think too, for me, and what our focus is going to be this year is culture. And like, culture is such a buzzword. And I always joke, like, I'm not a words on the wall person. So like, my first line of duty wasn't coming in and putting like family and control controllables and all these things up on the wall. And if people do that, great. That's just not me. I'm more of, hey, I'm about it, and we're going to be about it. But we will win in the locker room first. Like, I don't care. I mean, I care, but like, we're not going to go from 5 wins last year to 30. That's just not going to happen. We have to win together in the day-to-day things. And that's just the other focus too. So when we do get the girls for our summer workouts, what are the standards of those workouts? What is our locker room going to look like? How do we treat people when we are talking to each other, when we're resolving conflict and just doing all those things? And so again, such an advantage this time around, having a staff that knows what that looks like for me, like what I like, what I want, so they can help me with that. I'm not coaching, like you said, I'm not coaching two teams on what that looks like. Thank God this time around. But no, I think that's the biggest thing, is it's the relationships, it's the people, and it's what is winning going to look like for us in terms of the process. And we have to start laying that foundation.
Yeah. Yeah. Just day to day. You're right. That, you're right. The word culture is overused and it's so beaten up. It's at a bloody pulp right now in our profession in terms of how it's beaten up. But it's like, how do you live together, and how do you see people see that the way you live?
Yeah, exactly.
As a group, as a staff, exactly. As a team, how do you live together day to day? And then how do people on the outside, on the perimeter, not just the way you play, not just the way you share the ball, but how do they see you live? How do they see your group exist? How does the opposing hotel on the road see your team act in this ballroom where you have meals? We can do 15 pods on it, but the point is, how does your group in the building live together, and then how do people see you live? And I'm so glad you said that, because it's so easy to be like a head coach where you just bury yourself in the office. And I made that mistake myself, I think, at year one at Charlotte, and then I got better at it after about a month when my former boss gave me a little talking to on the phone about the importance of being out and getting out. But you've got to throw yourself into the campus culture. It's literally like you said about the deep end with the floaties. There's no floaties now with this. Like, you throw yourself into, like you said, take donuts to financial aid, right? Send Starbucks coffee and walk it up there yourself to admissions, and make people feel your culture. And they make you then feel like, hey, yeah, this person's all in. They don't want to just be a get off my lawn, come see us play, but I don't want to see you other than that. In certain schools, maybe you can get away with that. And
right.
If you've got 600 wins somewhere, you can get away with that. But like when you're a first year head coach, even being head coach somewhere else, but you're a first year head coach at BC, even though you've been a head coach before, this is the first year head coach at BC. And yeah. So you have to take that to everybody else, like you're a first year head coach here, even though you've done it before.
Yep.
So it's so good that you said that. I actually text that to the coach at San Diego when I was leaving, and it wasn't about whether he was going to keep me or not. I just said, this is a place where people need to feel you every day. I literally told him that.
Yeah.
And I said, that's going to speak volumes about what you're trying to do by the way you extend yourself out. And I'm just like, just try to be first as many times as you can on campus.
Yep.
Well, no, that's great advice. You got to get in front of the people that are going to be able to help you out in any capacity. As you said in the beginning, too, the equipment guys or guys or gals, excuse me, either of them, they're going to be helping you out. If you don't know who they are and you just go to them and say, hey, get this done for me and run through a wall for somebody that I don't know and don't have a relationship with. So that's a great point to get to meet the people around you. I feel like a lot of people don't talk about that much. Yeah. So I'm glad that you said
that's
that because we ask these type of questions to people, but not many people have covered that one. So I got to give you some praises. That was good.
That's big. Yeah.
That is good advice.
Thank you.
So how do you feel going into a program? I know prior to you being there, as you mentioned, I believe they had four or five wins this past season. Mm-hmm. So obviously there's a little bit of a rebuild that needs to go on. But then again, I feel like nowadays college basketball is a rebuild every single year. Especially, I'm into Division III, so I can't speak on it too much. I feel like we have some consistency, but up at the Division I level, I hear from Mage and like a lot of people, I feel like it's probably a rebuild every year because you never know who you're going to get back. People leave, others come in. How do you feel about just kind of hitting the groundwork, having to rebuild a program? Because you've done it before, so obviously I'm sure you're not too scared of it.
I think retention is the best skill you can have in terms of being a coach now. And I don't think every coach has that philosophy, but I do. I am never going to be someone that wants to be somewhere where it's supposed to be, I flip the roster every year, I get 13 new people, we build, we do this. It's not unique to me. It's not authentic to me. I don't want to do it that way. To the coaches who do and can and get, great. That's their style. Just like how certain coaches believe in pressing and certain people believe in pack line. Everyone has their different philosophy. Neither is superior to the other. It's coaches that do what's authentic to them, recruit to that system, coach to that system, get the best players for that system. That's what wins, right? And so I think for me, it's just not authentic to who I am. It's been a challenge. I will never forget what I learned from losing my best player my second year. And her kind of, it felt like a blind side, even though if maybe I had been paying better attention, it wouldn't have been. I took it so personal. I took it so personally. And I think it's because she transferred and it is what it is. And I think I took it personally because I pour a lot into the players and I pour a lot in the relationships. That's who I am. That's what I believe. And I had to shape my mindset and be like, but you still did that. Even though it wasn't for 4 years and maybe it was for one, it's not personal that she's leaving. She maybe a little bit. And you do have to look at what maybe you did as a coach to contribute to why she chose to go elsewhere. But it is business now. You know what I mean? It is different. These kids are viewing things differently. People are viewing things differently. And so I learned through that I have to, first of all, take it year to year instead of four. You know what I mean? Invest as much as I can in that 1 year, that one day, and be okay with what the result ends up being with it, right? But the second thing is also really still try to have a core foundation of players and people who believe in what we're doing and are going to stay and aren't looking to make that leap. And I think you can still do that. You know what I mean? Even in the world of pay for play, it's not pay for play. Lord have mercy. Cut that out of the pod. Rev share, NIL, whatever it is. It's, again, I still believe if you invest in people and you invest in relationships that culture is going to keep people there. The feel is going to keep people there. And all of us are in the same battle. When you have elite players, if the NBA had zero rules, zero cap, zero regulation, zero contracts, and the best players in the NBA got to test their free agency every year, they would do it 1,000 times out of 1,000. And
100%.
I can't be mad at the players on my team that are first team all conference that want to do that. You know what I mean? So you just got to let that go. You have to let go of that state and say, I failed her. No, you didn't. She was first team all conference in on your team. So hopefully what you do is you create an experience and a value within your program that keeps her. But if it doesn't, okay, can I keep the rest of the players who maybe aren't in that level of the market because they had a great experience, they believe in what we're doing, and they want to build this thing? And that's what we did at Bradley, and I'm hopeful that's what we can do at BC. Also, an institution like BC keeps people because it is a $500,000 degree. And at the end of the day, that is still important, no matter that we haven't talked about it probably in 5 or 6 years. But yeah, hey, guess what? My best player might go make $5 to $6 million in her professional playing career. Maybe. You know what I mean? And that's the probably 0.5%. She still is going to have to go figure out what she wants to do when that ball stops bouncing. And so that degree does matter. And so again, I think it's a challenging time. It's hard, but it's also, you have to stay true to who you are. And I think that for me, I'm in the hope that we won't have to totally rebuild every year, but you have to be okay with the chaos and the change and understanding it isn't like it was 5 to 10 years ago. It's not the way it was when I played. But it doesn't mean that the way you do things is wrong and it's broken. And I had to learn that in a really challenging way in my first few years as a head coach and losing players and things like that.
No, that's so true. And I think the other thing that helps you, I won't say tolerate's not a good word, but something that helps you maintain is that you continue to adjust to these changing winds right now, is that when you're at a place that you believe in and when you're at a place that you feel like you can be connected to, I don't know how long it took you by either the Zooms with the BC people or being on campus, but it's like players, as coaches, you get someplace, you step on campus, you in that first 30 minutes walking around, you kind of feel like, all right, yeah, this place and me can get along. And whatever that feeling is, I can't describe it, but I think that also helps when you deal with everything that you just mentioned. When you're at a place that you feel connected to and you feel like that place has its principles lined up the right way. And I'm sure what was probably that is the connection between your AD and the president and feeling like there's an alignment there. And if you feel that's also aligned, then that also kind of helps bolster the changing tides of everything that's going on. As you fit, you're at a place, pin drop wise, you feel like you can get it done and you feel like it's a place you're connected to, but you also feel aligned with your people that you need to be aligned with.
Yes. And
to me, those two things, and you can speak to it now that you've been there several weeks, because that's a big deal as well, just being aligned with your administration.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a shared value system. It's like any relationship. My husband and I aren't going to be happy in our marriage if he wants kids and I don't. Those are non-negotiables. We can find a way to be happy if I like one house and he likes another and we end up settling on one. It's a house. It's a place where we lay our heads. We're the home. But yeah, I think that gets lost all the time now. People forget that there's values in this. And then they get places and they took the biggest check or they went somewhere because they liked the gym or someone told them to go there or whatever it is. And then when it gets hard in the month of December, they're like, what? And it's just like a relationship. The first 6 months of a relationship, everything's perfect. Everything is beautiful. Everything's happy. You know what I mean? But then you recognize that there's some stuff here and you got to make the choice if you want to deal with that stuff. And when you don't do that research early, it matters. And for me in a coaching job, the biggest thing I needed to figure out about BC, okay, I knew the record. I knew that they have not won at an NCAA championship or tournament level in a long time. Okay, great. They sent me pictures of the gym. I can research campus. I can know the enrollment. I can know the endowment. I can know all these things. I needed to go to campus and feel that I was going to have an administration that was in the trenches with me and fighting with me. And that's what I felt. It's the same thing when we play a game. These kids need to know I'm fighting for them. I need to know they're fighting for me and for the Boston College across their chest. We overcomplicate it so much. And it's not that complicated. It is hard to know if values align. That's why it's hard to find the person you want to marry or hard to find the place, the deep, meaningful stuff that makes it. That's hard to, like you said, that feeling. You got to feel it, but you also have to trust it. But yeah, I think that for me, that gets overlooked. And again, I think that's one of the things I learned the most from my mentors is like Joe McEwen was like the least organized person I've ever met in my entire life. It was insane. And I was like, how did he get through a day? But his instincts, his ability obviously to coach, but more importantly, he just made people feel valued and he genuinely cared. He would give people the shirt off his back. And that's how you win for 40 years. You know what I mean? That's how you build a resume like that, in my opinion. And that's like what I saw. I'm like, oh my God, the man doesn't know that he has an 11 o'clock meeting. I got to call him and remind him. You know what? That doesn't really matter because guess what? I called him and reminded him and he went to the meeting. That's like this important. But like, when it was 2 o'clock in the morning and one of his players called him, he was answering that phone. When something happened to someone in the department, like you said, he was the first one to bring bagels or coffee or whatever. And yeah, this, we are in the office for 12 to 14 hours a day. Sometimes we travel together. It is crazy in that sense. If those values aren't there, man, that is what creates misery. And misery loves company and no it's doubt. Contagious. So yeah, it is, you could not be more head on and spot on when you say that stuff.
You even said too, make sure, or going back to more of the beginning, you said hire the assistants that can do the things that you aren't capable of doing. You called him to remind him about the meeting. So that's why you got those people around you, because I know you got my back, I got yours.
And why do you think he hired me? Because I was color-coded, borderline OCD, double check, triple check. That's why he hired me. He's like, yeah, Pop, because you're good at that. So you allow me to be great at what I do. And that was, you learned so much from that. And I think that I just learned from him, the value is so much deeper than just the performance tactic of it. What leads to the championship is the investment that you make in the people you believe in. And that was what Joe McEwen got 1,000 times out of 1,000. And something I remember watching him run across our football field to one of the groundskeepers to give him a t-shirt that his daughter Megan had gotten signed by our groundskeeper's favorite NASCAR driver because she covered the Indy 500.
Yeah. And there's three people on planet Earth that know about that.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, or four, maybe the you, him, the guy and his daughter.
And the reason I remember it is because I was dragging him to a meeting to make sure we were on time and he had to go across the football field and give this. But then I realized I'm like, so we're going to be 3 minutes late to this meeting. Because he did that. He's sitting on his cell phone and being disrespectful.
Like, yeah, exactly.
It's
exactly.
Because he cares that much about people at this institution that he is going out of his way to make sure he gets that done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's it.
Great point. And I got to say, I find it, it's cool, I'm sure. But you mentioned about having assistants that you can bring in and people that you can trust. Being able to be on staff with your husband. I know, I'm sure going into the office and then coming home, there's probably a lot of basketball. I don't know if there's that divider, but I'm sure that's a cool experience because I remember looking and I texted Danny about it. I was talking to him. I was like, if you look at Coach Ollie Goss on the roster, the assistant coach, you see he's like speaking and he said, oh, I really look forward to working with Coach Popovic. And I'm thinking, I'm like, huh, that's cool. But if anybody can vouch for him, though, it's definitely the husband, right? That's an awesome opportunity.
Say that.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. People ask us all the time how we do it. And to be honest with you, it's all we know. Ollie and I met when he was a GA and I was player development at Northwestern and forged a very deep friendship. And then obviously got into a relationship and it moved at lightning speed and we got married and it was super fast. But literally, he is my best friend. And I kind of joke about relationships, like everything's good in the first 6 months, then you find out all the crap about people and have to make the choice of whether you want to deal with it. We did that first. And so for us, the relationship part was like super easy because we did all the work, we did all the hard stuff. But I think that it is just what we know. It's what we love. Obviously, I had my daughter November 29th, and I think that it's really special that we get to do it together. I am the hardest on him. He takes the most from me. But I think the biggest thing everyone's, oh my God, how do you not bring it in? I'm like, because we don't. It's honestly the hardest part of what we do is shutting off the work piece and remembering that there's an us piece behind that. You know what I mean? And so like, we've really had to cultivate boundaries, specifically me, because like when my brain gets on that spin cycle, I can't shut it off. Whereas like he can, he'll be like, oh my God, can you believe this? And then he's okay, cool. I'm going to go like watch European basketball at 11 PM. And I'm in the bed going, oh my God, I can't believe we did this. What are we going to do? How are we going to do? And I'm on the hamster wheel and he's what? And I'm like, you did this to me. And so like, we've had to set boundaries of, hey, after 9 PM, let's not do this. Or like, I just look at him and I'm like, hey, you know what? I can't process that right now. Like I have to process doing what I'm doing right now, which is making dinner and trying to take a step away from that. And I think so we've done that, but I also want to shout out my staff, because as cool as it is for us, it does take unique people to have, who have really strong confidence that like, I didn't just hire him because he's my husband. I hired him because he's qualified for the job at hand and he's really good at what he does. That's why I hired him. I have really confident assistants that trust my individual relationships with them and the value I have with them with what their job is, equally to what I value Ollie. So like, to find assistants that are also willing to deal with those dynamics, but also appreciate it. And they have individual relationships with him. You know what I mean? To them, he's another assistant. He's not my husband. And I really credit my staff because I took time to be diligent about hiring people that would understand that, but also embrace the fact that we are married and not be threatened by it. And that's been, again, I cannot sing the praises of the people I have in my office, because we genuinely are all friends. We all get along and we all have unique relationships to each other that are non-threatening to the relationships that everyone has with each other, like individually. And then as a group, it's the best version of us. And I think like people in this business, it is not a 9-to-5. So you can't treat it that way. Like I don't just get to come home and shut my door and turn my phone off for the weekend. So the people you spend your time with in the office, they do become friends. It's not a typical boundary system that you would have. Yes, I'm their boss and they respect me as their boss, but like, we also have deep relationships and we all value that within each other. And obviously being able to work with my husband is really special. Being able to raise our daughter together in this environment is amazing. To watch the team love her, to watch my staff love her and like literally fight over her in the office. Right now she's referred to as office baby because we don't have childcare. So she's like in the office if we don't have someone to watch her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And right. So that's awesome. I think is great. But I think my husband is the best dad in the world, the best husband in the world. But I also think he is one hell of a coach. And that's why he's on my staff bettering us every day. And it is really fun that we get to do it together. People ask us all the time, how do you do that? I'm like, I couldn't imagine life without it. Like I couldn't. This is what we do. This is how we've chosen to do things and we do it together. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. You guys handled the friendship thing first and friends understand, like it's that, again, you need a moment and you're in the house together and 2 hours go by and you don't speak to each other. That's not a bad thing. That's like, just you have your space, do what you got to do. Again, like you said, watching FIBA and you're doing something else. But sometimes in relationships people are like, nah, I can't imagine that. What's the problem? What's going on? How come they're not speaking to each other? It's called space. It's called friendships. It's called just understanding the individual that you're with. And so really cool that you guys get to do that. And even more, like you said, getting back to the staff hiring thing, who you brought in, it's that those kind of hearts, again, the hearts and mentalities bleed into some of this other stuff that you're talking about, even down to temporary childcare.
Who's
got the kid in the office right now? Where is she? She's down here, over here.
Yeah. Seriously, I'm like, she is in here, right? She is somewhere in the vicinity, right? We're good. And then I have staff members fighting. No, I am her favorite. We're very lucky.
And I immediately think
starts walking, she'll be everywhere. God knows.
Yeah. Oh God.
Yeah. Too fast. That's a little too
immobile.
Fast.
Immobile is good. We really don't have much time left. She's very advanced. She's huge. So we're in trouble.
I immediately think of not only are like recruits and other people coming to Boston College looking and whatnot, but I the culture piece, going back to what we were saying in the beginning, they are seeing you not as a coach. They're seeing you on all perspectives. So they literally are in a day of your life. As soon as they come on a visit and start talking to you, I'm guessing, like, you got your daughter there, you got your husband. So they literally see the full glimpse, because sometimes coaches can go home and you're like, I have no idea what he does as soon as he goes home. They could be a completely different person. They're seeing you thin and thin, like through and through. So I'm sure that helps a ton too, to build that culture, because it's like, this is it. This is what you got.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a what you and what you get kind of vibe. But I've always been that way. I've kind of been a person, like, I'm almost 6'4". And I grew up, you guys know where I grew up, in Canfield, Ohio. There aren't many 6'4" people walking around. I was always kind of different. I always stood out. There hasn't been a day in my life where people don't go, how tall are you? Wow, you're huge, whatever it is. So yeah. I kind of was always just, I'm going to be who I am. And I'm just like, you're going to see me for better or worse. It just is what it is. And I think I've kind of taken that style as a coach to a degree. I'm not going to come in the office sobbing over a bad day and things like, there's obviously still a boundary of professionalism. But I tell recruits all the time, one of the questions you'll get is, describe your coaching style. And I always tell them, I am not the coach that stands in the box and calmly coaches the game. That's not how I approach my life. That's not how I approach coaching. My heart's on my sleeve. You're going to know how I feel. That's just me. And I think I really want to create an environment where people feel like who they are is good enough. We're all just trying to become the best versions of ourselves, right? Who I am as a mom, as a coach, it is good enough. I'm still trying to become the best version I can be of that. But that doesn't mean, as a leader, I think I have to be vulnerable with my kids sometimes. You know what I mean? And my staff. There was a point this year where I had a baby, November 29th. I came back to coaching, I think 9 days later. I didn't take a break. I didn't take a breath. And I am a person that's used to being in control, doing what I want, doing, I believe I can do everything. And it is my greatest strength and my greatest weakness. And when you have a baby and you in the middle of the season and you're trying to navigate this, guess what? You learn that I can't be everything for everyone. I have to let people in. And so many people wanted to help me. My staff was dying to help me. I had to articulate to them what it was that I needed, and they were going to go do it 1,000%. They couldn't read my mind. They couldn't do this. But I had a day in the office where I got pretty emotional about, I felt like I was failing everyone. And I was able to share that with my staff. And I remember, like I told you, my husband was also able to articulate. He literally said, she does not like to be told she can't do things, and she feels like she can't do things, and she's losing her mind. It is what it is. But it just was a really humbling moment for me to see people step up for me, to see people step up for our players and our program and not look back, and not, because my staff knows I fight for them. And again, that's what it all comes down to. And a couple weeks later, like I told my players, guys, I was really having a hard time. It's okay to go through hard things and ask for help and say what you need. And so I do think I'm pretty vulnerable, probably more vulnerable and open than certain coaches, just because that style feels unique and authentic to who I am and unique and authentic to how we're going to run our program. It's worked for me. It served me, and hopefully it continues to. But yeah, they see it all. They see the good, the bad, the everything in between. But also, that's what I hope to see in my players. I don't want them to walk in the gym and feel like they have to be only 25% of who they are. Now, there's a time and a place to be a version of yourself. So like, I don't need you to have a mental breakdown on the court because you got a C on your test in the middle of when we're trying to win a game in the fourth quarter. We do have to compartmentalize that. There's a time and space for everything, but I do want them to feel that they can have their moments and their emotions. And again, like, one of the best things that I learned is emotions don't drive the car, but they do sit in the back seat and you have to acknowledge that they're there. And so I think that's kind of how we try and do things. But yeah, they see everything. All the recruits have seen our baby. I actually think Mira is a great recruiter. She helps me a little bit. I have zero problem with that. Oh,
no doubt.
You are saying you don't want to come to BC. Look how cute she is. Here you go. Right. Come on. Let's be real. But no, I think it is really fun. It's really cool. And just for her to be growing up in such an environment of empowerment and being around really just amazing people is so cool. So awesome. Yeah.
No, that's the way it should be. It's called a team. It's called a team for a reason. And again, you just described your first team to a T and the type of hearts they have. And typically in our sport, you're gonna draw what you attract. And the fact that you've tried to draw some people that really care about the right things, then it gets back to what we said earlier. Just keep filling the building with good people. Good people will figure it out. good people will, they'll find a way. And yeah, you got a couple of BC fans right here for sure. So you can count
on
that.
Thank you.
Honestly,
you guys.
No, looking forward to seeing how things go this upcoming season for you. I know we got a little while. It's now, what, May when we're recording this. So we got a little while until the next season comes about. So I'm sure there's a lot of moving parts that are going to be coming up in the meantime. But once the season hits, you definitely be keeping an eye out, because looking forward to seeing how you do. Obviously, as you said, too, it takes time to rebuild. So it's not going to be a 1 year, 2 year thing. It could be longer. Who knows? Hopefully it's not longer. Hopefully it's shorter. But
for our sanity, I hope it's not super long. But no, I think it's going to take some time. And I think that was another thing, too, is our administration. When I told them that, they didn't look at me and go, you don't have time. They said, no, if that's how you want to build it, we are hiring you for that purpose of what your vision is and what this looks like. Obviously, this is a results-driven business, right? You win or you lose, and you're going to get fired based on that or retained based on that, right? So there's reality to it. But I think, again, being able to do it in a way that I feel like is authentic to who I am and aligns with BC was really important. And I think that those things are 100% aligned. And so you just got to, we got to dive into the process and then let the results take care of themselves, whether that takes 6 months, whether that takes a year, whether that takes 2 years. And I think it's going to be a combination of everything in between, but also our standards as a program will evolve as we continue to grow and adjust. And yeah, listen, I think this year is going to be interesting. I have zero clue what it's going to look like. I guess that's part of the fun of it, but I do know, I tell my players what it's going to feel. And it's going to feel like we are moving towards something really great. And not every day, not every minute of every day, we're going to get our butts whooped. It's going to be tough. There's going to be things that happen. But at the end of the day, we're going to be moving forward. We're going to be climbing up a ladder. And the results kind of fall into place. So we will see what those results are. But we're really excited. And I appreciate you guys hosting me and carving out the time. It's always great to do these things and highlight Boston College and highlight my staff and highlight all the amazing people and things that have led me here. Thank you guys for giving me that platform to do it.
The most important thing is today, Mira got to highlight it. So we got the most important thing highlighted is your new 5-month-old daughter. And I'm so happy that you're aligned with an administration that you guys see eye to eye, because you're aligned for the times when times are tough. You're not aligned for when times are going great and you've won 7 straight. You're aligned for when you've lost 4 out of 5 and 2 starters have ankle injuries and you got seven or 8 players in the rotation. And so that's when the alignment. So everybody needs to be singing like the Temptations when that's going on.
Yes.
And that's why you're aligned now for then.
Correct.
And I'm so happy that you're at a place where you guys have already decided to hold hands and do it together. But now all the best to you. This was really cool for us.
Thank you guys so much and appreciate what you guys are doing. And thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely.
And thank you. Like I said,
we're everywhere. We're everywhere. 330. The 330 represent.
Love it. I love it. Again, thank you for being on here. And thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. If you didn't learn something today, rewind, play it back, get your pen and notepad back out. But we are excited to be able to share this. Everybody, thank you all again for tuning in. Your host, Alan Major, Doug Caputo. Coaches, keep working. Keep rising, coaches. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together. We'll be right back.
coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.